Now, about...
Well, that's very brave of you, brother, after folks sitting here from 3 o'clock and some from 2:30. But we do appreciate that. It's easier, much easier to listen to a Scotsman for 2 hours than an Irishman for 2 hours. So we are very grateful for the opportunity of speaking to an audience still at this late hour of the day. And we know many of you will be feeling very tired. For my part, Jack could have gone on a little longer. In nearly 30 years in assembly life, I don't think I have heard anyone ever speak on 2 Samuel 21. If we'd been asked to spell Ishbibinov, never mind tell where the Bible spoke of him, I don't think too many of us would have got the prize. For my part, I enjoyed it exceedingly well, and we could have listened to it for a good while longer. However, I'll ask you to turn just now, please, to the first book of Samuel and read in chapter 3. The first book of Samuel and read, please, in chapter 3. 1 Samuel 3, reading please at verse number 1. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli, and the word of the Lord was precious in those days. There was no open vision. And it came to pass at that time, when Eli was laid down in his place, and his eyes began to wax dim that he could not see, and ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep. But the Lord called Samuel, and he answered, Here am I. And he ran unto Eli, and said, Here am I, for thou callest me. And he said, I called not, lie down again. And he went and lay down. And the Lord called yet again, Samuel. And Samuel arose and went to Eli, and said, Here I am, for thou didst call me. And he answered, I called not, my son, lie down again. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. And the Lord called Samuel again a third time. And he arose and went to Eli and said, Here am I, for thou didst call me. And Eli perceived that the Lord had called the child. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, Go, lie down, and it shall be, if he call thee, that thou shalt say, Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. So Samuel went and lay down in his place, and the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel answered, Speak, for thy servant heareth. Now over, please, to chapter 7. 1 Samuel, on chapter 7, verse 1. And the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the ark of the Lord, and brought it unto the house of Abinadab in the hill, and sanctified Eliezer his son to keep the ark of the Lord. And it came to pass, while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. And Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If ye do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Verse 9, And Samuel took a sucking lamb, and offered it for a burnt offering, holy unto the Lord. And Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. Verse 12, Then Samuel took a stone, and set it between Mizpah and Shin, and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, Hitherto hath the Lord helped us. Now chapter 9, just for a verse or two, chapter 9 of the same book, and verse 15. Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear, a day before Saul came, saying, Tomorrow about this time I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people, because their cry is come unto me. And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said unto him, Behold the man whom I spake to thee of, the same shall reign over my people. Chapter 15, and reading these at verse 10. 1 Samuel 15, verse 10. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, It repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me, and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. Verse 14, And Samuel said, What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? And Saul said, They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Verse 22, And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. Now finally, chapter 16, verse 1, And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil, and go, I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. Verse 7, But the Lord said unto Samuel, Look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him, for the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Verse 11, And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and good to look on. And the Lord said, Arise, anoint him, for this is he. Now the Lord will bless the reading of his word with trust, with all that we have heard this day. Those that were with us in the afternoon meeting will remember that it had been my exercise to look at the closing verses of the Epistle to the Hebrews, chapter 5, which detailed for us one of the, perhaps five of the reasons for the lack of stature and spiritual growth in the lives of the Lord's people. And the closing verse of that chapter pointed out to our attention that there was a need to be exercised, to have, as the Bible puts it, our senses exercised to discern both good and evil. And in a very simple way, I try to look practically at the development of those senses that we possess in our body. That is, the sight, the hearing, the touch, the taste, and the smell. Showing that in that fivefold environment, there is the possibility of coming closer to grips with the things of God and growing in spiritual stature in the measure in which these things are keenly tuned. And we'll look this afternoon at the matter of the increase and the importance of spiritual vision. And for that study, we looked at the life of Moses and saw that all the days of his life and his ministry were marked with great sights that burst upon his eyes, the like of which no other man had possibly ever seen to the full, and they enabled him to live for God. Had we read in Deuteronomy chapter 34, to which indeed we referred, as he looks from Mount Pisgah at the beauties of a land that was yet to be enjoyed, the Bible records, yet was not his eye dim, nor his natural strength abated. Right to the end of his days, his keen spiritual vision continued, and it would be our desire that such would be true in all our lives. We are brought tonight to think about a day when spiritual vision was very low indeed. In fact, we are introduced at the commencement of the chapter where we started reading to a man, and it said of him that in contrast to Moses, his eye was dim. And there was no open vision. And there seemed to be a great lack of spiritual perception and spiritual discernment that marked the days of Samuel's birth. Now tonight, just for this half hour or so that we're still together, I would like to take up another great man of God. For if Moses was indeed the man of vision, and in a special way those things were true of him, I think that if we scan the pages of the Word of God, we shall all agree, at least to some measure, that Samuel was the man with the ear that was best perhaps tuned, and in his day especially, to hear the voice of God. And so tonight I want to think of that second of the senses. I've looked at it very simply and practically from Hebrews 5. The second of those senses that need to be spiritually exercised, that we can, in 1991, discern both good and evil. I hope that if the Lord would help us in the nights to come, from Monday to Wednesday, we might have help to look at the three remaining features and see how they will also influence and affect us in our spiritual life and progress. That's if the Lord will. Now Samuel was a man with an acutely tuned ear. I think it's good to remember that he was listening for a voice of God and was at least ready to hear it and to identify it, in spite of every other sound that must have blotted and closed around his ears. You know, sometimes, you know how it is, and if you're in a workplace nowadays, and sometimes if you're on a bus or indeed any public place, very often there can be a loud, blaring music in the background. Nothing annoys me more. It's not always my choice of music, admittedly, but even it was, that ability, that inability to carry on a conversation because somebody's blasting or blaring away at some kind of music in the background. It becomes very difficult to hear a clear, defined conversation. I want you to notice, dear believers, that the man that heard the voice of God was a man that heard it in spite of a noisy, sinful attitude that was around him from day to day. The first thing, you see, I want you to notice that is that he was able to hear the call of God. But he heard it. Oh, so somebody like, if I lived in the temple like Samuel did, I would be able to hear a lot more clearly. And mind you, the things I would do for God would be great. But you know, where I work in the house that I live in, and in the place that I have to work and move, it's not easy to try and listen for the call of God or to obey the voice of God. I want to say this, that in Samuel's early days in the precincts of the tabernacle, there was sufficient evil abounding practiced by the sons of Eli that would have turned the most of young men's hearts away from serving God altogether. The practices of the sons of the priest and their evil that was being performed in the very precincts of the holy place would have been enough to send the most of us home and say, forget our whole business about serving God altogether. If only you knew the things that went on, and if only you knew the kind of people that are found in the precincts of the tabernacle in Shiloh, you wouldn't go near the place at all. That's the way most of us would have reacted. Our brother was reminding us that we need to be careful and appreciative of assembly life and of the truth of God, so that we do not run to other places and run to other centres that our joys may be obtained, but to find our joy in God. And the secret of Samuel's continuance was that he found in Shiloh not so much a look at the people that lived and served there, but a look and love for the God to whom ministry was given and whose very name was identified with that place of testimony. Yes, the big thing was this. In the midst of the bustle and noise of the evil of the sons of Eli, when all about would have discouraged many a young person, and an older one too, from continuing in the work of God, there's a man still with an ear to hear the call of God. Let us speak to young folks. Not so many of them may be here today. We're very glad to see all who have come and stayed some the whole day. You will grow up perhaps as a Christian to hear many of the ills amongst God's people. And you'll come to a stage perhaps when they, maybe the lack of fruit and the lack of development and the lack of interest amongst the saints or the assembly that you maybe have to have been brought up amongst, and you say, well, you know, I don't see a terrible lot about the whole business. And over here, you know, they're seeing hundreds of people saved. And last week there was a dozen saved here and two dozen over the way. And in this place, you know, there doesn't seem to be a great deal to attract. I think we'll just forget the whole business and go and make our fellowship somewhere else. Now listen, dear young believer, let us appeal to you tonight. Form your convictions of the truth of assembly gathering from the reading of the Word of God. And have an estimate of the privilege of assembly fellowship, looking into the Word of God for yourself. Not so much the people who go there, attractive though at times they might be, but make it your business to be there, because that's where God would have you to be. And out of an exercise of heart, to learn the truths of gathering to the name of the Lord Jesus. Why did Samuel stay at Shiloh? Because he liked the people? Because he liked the environment? I believe there was already begotten in his heart in a young day a commitment to value the place where God's name was recognized and honored. What we need today in 1991, coming up amongst the saints, or young men and women, and older ones as well, but I'm thinking especially with the, if the Lord should tarry, and there be a little time before us until the Lord come, or people of conviction, as to the reality of the identity of New Testament assemblies, thus they will be able not only to function there, but to stay there, and to do a mighty work for God in staying. Here's a man, and he has an ear for the call of God. And the failures of the people, and the dimness of the eye of old Eli, and the fleshly seated priest, careless in his efforts, would not detract him from the great business of serving God from his youth. I wonder, can we hear the call of God still? I wonder, are our ears still tuned to listen? I'm not even thinking of a missionary call, though that we cannot rule out. There might be people in this meeting tonight that will take the gospel further than any of us have ever been before. There might be people here tonight to whom God would speak and direct his word and his call, that they might be used mightily for God in other lands afar. We cannot tell. But I wonder, in ordinary everyday life, are our ears tuned to hear the voice of God, to hear him calling, to hear him speak to us? Or is it just a glib kind of thing when we sing in the gatherings of the saints, "Master, speak, thy servant heareth"? Is it just something to sing about happily when we are together? Have we time to listen? Have we peace and quiet to listen? How else are we to know the mind of God unless we give ear to his voice? The ministry right through the whole Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, to him that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Can we pay attention? God will not speak perhaps in our day as he spoke to young Samuel in the days of his youth. But we have before us and in our possession a living book. God uses it still to direct the course of his people. And he can and will, in every day round of life, call upon us, make use of us, if we are indeed receptive to his call. So in the midst of the disturbances, I want you to try and get that. You know, we sometimes think, well, if I lived out in the country, you know, some of you folks do live out in the country, we town people and city people, maybe never had the same peace and quietness that some of you had in many ways, but sometimes you think, well, if I lived out in the country, nobody to bother me, you know. Well, it's not just always so easy out in the country either, with nobody to bother you. But we have a false sense of what it's like and what we will do. And as Jack was reminding us, you know, planning for the future. I remember people saying to me, one or two in particular, "Oh, sir, when I retire, I tell you, the useful man I'll be, and the time I'll have to do this, and the time I'll have to do something else." Well, I don't know much about retirement yet, but any I have known that retired, they wondered ever they had time to work, they found so much other things to do in their retirement. But we can all look out and say, you know, what I will do, and what I will be. Oh, now, we're preaching the gospel about an acceptable time to get saved. And I would re-echo our brother's word and ministry, that these are the days, and these are the times of opportunity. And while we're younger, at the particular stage we're at now, let us lend our ear to the voice of God, and be exercised to know what God would have us do. This is the exercise needed. This is what the writer to the Hebrews has in mind, that there would be maturity, and growth, and development, inasmuch as we listen to the voice of God from day to day. Four times he called. God in mercy called and called and called and called again, knowing that in that young heart there would be a desire to listen to his voice and to his message. And so he has an ear open in a very special way to hear the call of God. May the Lord grant it to us all, whether young or old, in whatever time lies and remains to us until the Lord shall come. But I want you to notice another thing, and again we come close into the ministry that our brother has been giving us, and that was this: in chapter 7, he was a man who had an ear for the cries of God's people. Now, that's an important thing. And there were people down in chapter 7, the ark 20 years in Kirjath-Jearim, and the people lamented after the Lord. "Now," says Saul, "now," says Samuel, "if you really do want to get back to the Lord," well, he said, "now you know you've got to make things right amongst yourselves. Put away the idols. Clear the pathway that God will work. Put away these things and make matters right, much as after the style that David did. in trying to regain the ground that had been lost. And it says, I will pray for thee. And the people said, cease not to pray for us. And Samuel goes up and offers a sucking lamb and cries unto God. And I couldn't help but think of words, though they're not actually here. And it says, the Lord heard him. The Lord was entreated of him. We need men like that, with that kind of ear. Sometimes we're too busy lamenting about our own woes to hear the lamentations of the saints. A genuine distress cry. I mean, I'm not talking about burdening people over much. There are some people that would keep you the whole night telling you their troubles and trials and difficulties, and we don't want to become a burden one to another. We don't want to depress each other with a story of our troubles, but I'm talking about a genuine cry for help. Oh, that there would be an ear just to listen, to give counsel, to give advice, to be an intercessor. Isn't that the kind of ministry that Samuel's engaged in chapter 7? A ministry of intercession. Aye, we've been thinking, our brother has been reminding us of some of these dear saints of God that would need our prayers. Not only the suffering ones themselves, but those that would be tending and caring for them. I take the word to heart tonight, and I hope we all do. We need to have amongst us raised up men and women of intercession. Men that will hear the lamentation of the saints and will be able to put their finger on what is wrong. Sometimes, you know, we're very quick to share our troubles with others, but if they do happen to point out to us, now, you know, Tom, this is just where you've gone wrong, we might not just be as happy to confide in them again or to listen to their counsel for that matter. Ah, but Israel cried and lamented after the Lord. And when a ministry was given that would point out the error of their ways, and an intercessor raised up amongst them, we see there was response on the part of the people. Nice to see people responding to ministry. Our brother Jack probably would move a good deal in ministry amongst the saints and in the gospel too. And sometimes, you know, after gospel meetings, you go back to a place and you'll see somebody there and say, no, I got saved the last time we were here. Or somebody tells you, you know that man there, that woman across the way, they got saved. The meetings you had, or after the meetings you had. And you say, well, now that's a little result for the labours in the gospel. But we should expect results in ministry just the same, you know. We maybe wouldn't hear of it so often, but I do believe that as we move amongst the Lord's people, there should be results from ministry. I mightn't always tap you on the shoulder and say, man, you know, you just touched the spot where I was wrong, and I got it put right. But whether they tell you or not, wouldn't it be great if something of recovery had been made? Thank God we do believe in restoration. The God of the Bible is a God of restoration. Our reading through these books of Samuel and Chronicles and Kings, or even into the days of the prophet, thank God that where failure at times did abound, there was the glorious possibility of recovery and the regaining of ground that had been lost. Wouldn't it be fine if this time of conference in Glenburn would serve for all of us, preachers and hearers alike, that there would be in our lives a measure of recovery and restoration to God and to his ways. And intercessors raised up, even from this present company, in your assembly, wherever you come from, as well as the resident assembly here in Glenburn, to take to God matters of need, burdens of the saints, that there may indeed be opportunity for God to work and for his blessing to be seen. So he is an ear open. Oh, his ear is indeed open. We remember the blessed Lord, the perfect example in all of this. The man with the keen eye. The keen eye, you know, it says in the prophecy, who is blind but my servant? And deaf as the messenger that I have sent. I used to wonder at that when first I read it. But I take it to mean that he was blind to all but the way of God. Deaf to all but the voice of God. There was nothing that came before his eye that turned him out of the pathway. Poor David, you know, one day his eye let him down, and that which he saw led to his spiritual downfall and to problems in his life. And at times that which we hear can let us down, and we can dwell upon it. Jack was bringing to our attention the evils of slander and the like. Oh, how often that which falls upon the ears of the saints can be to their spiritual detriment. You know, the telephone lines can carry enough
hot air to fan the flames of strife and division amongst the people of God. We ought to be careful what we put into the ears of one another as the people of God. But the blessed Lord was deaf to all but the claims of God upon him, blind to all but the way of God before him. And in great measure, at least so was Samuel his servant, especially in these chapters that we have read. An ear finely tuned to hear the call of God. An ear finely tuned to hear the cries of the people of God. And then I notice, you know, that when you come into chapter 9 of this book, we have that very strange expression used, yet so delightful. The Lord had spoken, had said in the ear of Samuel that Saul was to come the next day. An ear to hear of coming events. God had told him, before ever the crisis arose, before ever the man presented himself, here was an ear into which God could put the truth of that which was still to come. Well, we hear of many a thing in time. I couldn't help but think in this connection, you know, though it's very much perhaps out of context, we have heard of one that's coming. Samuel could listen, you know, as the morning of the next day broke. He could have sang the hymn if he had known it and put the words into the context. I can almost hear his footfall on the threshold of the door. What's the matter? Oh, he's told me there's somebody coming. Somebody coming. As sure as the day would dawn, as sure as the hours would pass, there's a man who knows, before the day is gone, someone will cross the threshold. Fine to all, but the way of God before him, and in great measure, at least so was Samuel the servant, especially in these chapters that we have read. An ear finely tuned to hear the call of God. An ear finely tuned to hear the cries of the people of God. And then I notice, you know, that when you come into chapter 9 of this book, we have that very strange expression used, yet so delightful. The Lord had spoken, had said in the ear of Samuel that Saul was to come the next day. An ear to hear of coming events. God had told him, before ever the crisis arose, before ever the man presented himself, here was an ear into which God could put the truth of that which was still to come. Well, we hear of many a thing in time. I couldn't help but think in this connection, you know, though it's very much perhaps out of context, we have heard of one that's coming. Samuel could listen, you know, as the morning of the next day broke. He could have sang the hymn if he had known it and put the words into the context. I can almost hear his footfall on the threshold of the door. What's the matter? Now he's told me there's somebody coming. Somebody coming. As sure as the day would dawn, as sure as the hours would pass, there's a man who knows, before the day is gone, someone will cross the threshold. I've heard that. I wonder if we could just drop that wee practical note into our meeting at this time. We'll almost hear his footfall. We've listened to a word into our ear in a personal way, not only today, but over the years of our life as Christians. If I go away, I will come again. He's coming. We haven't been told the day of his coming, but it ought to exercise our hearts. Even as we go to our homes today, should it be permitted to arrive there. We'll gather perhaps in Glenburn or Glengormley or Laganvale or Bloomfield or around these other meetings in the city and further out. Gather round a table with a loaf of bread and a cup of wine. Sweet to remember and to think, before anybody goes to lay the table tomorrow morning, we'd all be gathered home in the morning on the banks of the bright Jasper Sea. He's coming! Before he comes, we have been advised. We've been told about him. We know the day will dawn. We cannot tell how long the present Prime Minister will stay in office or who will follow him. We cannot tell how the present Middle East crisis will be solved or what will happen. We cannot tell the outcome of the future for our own province. But we do know tonight in this conference meeting in Glenburn, Jesus is coming. Sing the glad word.
coming for those he redeemed by his blood,
coming to reign as the glorified Lord.
Jesus is coming again. Ah, says Samuel to himself, you know, isn't it marvelous to think that tomorrow I'm going to meet the man who's going to be the king over all Israel. Wonder how his mind must have worked. He was just a man like the rest of us.
Crossing my threshold tomorrow, there's going to be a man, and I'm going to pour in his head the vial that will mark him out as king of Israel.
Oh, dear saints, today, at the end of this day amongst the Christians, we all go home to maybe to your own particular problems there, maybe to burdens about families, maybe to a lonely home, maybe nobody else there but yourself. Great to know that before another day has come and gone, and before the meetings next week would ever take place, across our threshold might come the blessed one for whom we have been waiting, and our ears have been tuned just on that particular wavelength to hear the shout that will be given. I wonder, are we waiting? Will it really take us by surprise? Have we not been advised of his coming? Would not Samuel have been eagerly anticipating the moment, as we would say, when the door would knock?
The king is coming. The man in whom the nation's hopes will be built.
And I have had the privilege of hearing the news of his coming even before he has arrived. Oh, may the Lord help us that our ears will be tuned. Oh, not only to hear presently now the call of God in service and the cries of his people that would be necessary to share their burdens and intercede on their behalf, but to anticipate a king that's coming and to have the blessed privilege of knowing that we have been told even before he has stepped out to make his journey to call us to be with himself. That's the kind of ear we need to have still as the people of God. Whether you have a hearing aid or not, you know, you'll hear the shout. Whether it's turned up or low or off, it won't matter one little bit. Whether the age has taken its toll and you couldn't hear the phone ring or you couldn't hear a knock at the door, thank God, it's great to know not a saint will miss the shout of his coming. Everyone will rise to greet him and share those eternal joys in his presence. But then you know that I was thinking there was another thing that Samuel heard one day, but no less important as far as spiritual discernment was concerned. He has a word from the Lord as regards the misconduct of Saul. Now, poor Saul, we have been hearing a good deal about mistakes that he has made over this past few hours or so. And in chapter 15, it is Samuel's business to go and to visit the camp of Israel, as it were, and to speak to Saul. Now he says, "Were you not told to slay the Amalekites and the flocks and the herds?" Oh, he says, "Yes, we've done all that." "Ah," says Samuel, "now tell me, what meaneth this bleating of sheep in mine ear?" There was something about it that just wasn't right. Well, normally about Israel, we would have been glad to hear that would speak of sacrifice, that would speak of an altar, that would speak of obedience. But there's something detected in the spiritual man's ear that says, "No, there's something not quite right here. What meaneth this bleating of sheep and this lowing of the oxen? Should not all of these things have been destroyed utterly?"
"Oh, but," says Samuel, "I said, Saul, now, you know, of course, we only kept the very best. And we only kept the choicest. And oh, we didn't feel it would be right now to just slaughter the whole of the flocks. We kept the very best for the Lord. And we kept the choicest of the oxen and the choicest of the lambs."
"Ah, but," says Samuel, "now, did nobody ever tell you that to obey is better than sacrifice? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of lambs." That's a big challenge to us as believers. You know, you could have watched Moses down in Egypt yonder and said, "Now, answer, look at the power you'll be when you're the Pharaoh of the land, you know. Look at the good you'll be for God whenever you're in control. I tell you, sir, you'll make a difference. And you'll be able to put things right." "Oh, no," he says, "choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." And here's a something presented.
on the grounds of economy. My, don't we hear an awful lot about economy these days? Everything's done for economical reasons. Very interesting to notice that there were at least two occasions when men acted in a wrong way on the grounds of economy. We have to be wise and sensible about things, but you know, there was a man called Judas one day, and he says, why is this waste made? This isn't a very economical thing to do, to put all that worth of ointment upon the Lord. That could have been sold and given to the poor. Economy. Oh, so somebody would make a great economist. He would have got his degree all right. He would have been able to sort out the exchequer and all the rest of it. He would have been able to put things right. Ah, yes, his decision was on the ground of economy. Oh, let's sell it. And then you come to Saul, you see. He says, now they couldn't have just done away with all that. That would have been a waste. We had to keep the very best for the Lord. Economy. Now you see, the two principles are this, and I think we should learn them. One man puts on the altar what God does not want and calls it economy. Now that's all. And the other man would keep off the altar what God does want and he calls it. I wonder, in our lives as Christians, are we holding back from God that which he should rightfully have? So now, it'd be pity now for my brains to go to waste, you know, if I had any. But pity now for my energies, I'll have to put them into this and that, and look at mind you, the whole thing will grow. If God would be expecting my body a living sacrifice, keeping it off the altar, then it should be for God. And Saul goes to the other extreme. And he puts on the altar what God doesn't want. He says, now you know this is all on the grounds of economy. We don't want to waste it. Oh, I think we need to be wise. Keep the altar clear for that which God would have. In the service of God, in the present day, keep the preaching plain. Keep the assembly simple. Keep the pattern spiritual and scriptural. There's no need to bring into it or to put into it that which God never needs or requires on the ground of, well, you know, we had to make the best use of those boys we could, and we had to, I don't think Glenburn goes in for anybody singing at that, but I've heard people say, well, you know, they were such a good singer, it would have been a pity not to have them sing at the meetings, because they would be just wonderful singers. Why, that's all right now, and I like good singing as well as anybody else. But I think there's a place and a time, and we should be careful. Keeping the thing simple and plain and scriptural, and moving for God in the interest of his work and in accordance with his work. Keeping it to the book and putting on the altar for God and for his service that which can be best useful for his blessed work. Now there's the man, he's got his ear. What means the bleating of the sheep? Some not right about it. Something here that God has never required, nor requested. We ought to be careful about putting out. Oh, we have plenty to put off. Reading through the New Testament epistles, putting away lying. Hardly needs to be said, says some, but our brother has been reminding us, and rightly so, honesty in business. Honesty in business. Uprightness in life, our manner of life before the Lord. Let us be zealous in putting off malice and envy and strife and bitterness and the whole list of things that we could well do without, so that God's altar might be fresh and clean and pure, and on it that which will be for his blessing and for the good of his people. And then one day in chapter 16, again the year of Samuel is over. Must have been a very precious experience for him, you know. He has heard about these things in his day. His ear has been tuned to listen to the call of God, and to the cries of the people of God, and to the, what we might call in chapter 15, the case for disobedience. This is Paul. This is Saul's explanation of it. Now he hears of the, not only the coming events, but he hears of the choice of God's king. Ah, he says, and he hears in his ear that day the Lord say, this is the man. This is he. There he is, you know. God looketh on the heart. Man looketh on the outward appearance, but God looketh on the heart. And he would likely have chosen a liar.
No, says God, that's not the man. No, he says, passing all one after another before him, hast thou yet another son? And they bring him in. And he hears that word in his ear, that likely not another heard. This is he. Oh, isn't it great that God's appointed man, God's king, God's future king on earth has already, as it were, been appointed. Oh yes, he's coming. Coming his saints to release. Coming to give to this warring earth peace. Sinning and sighing and sorrow will cease. Jesus is coming again. I wonder, could we hear that note even as we come to the end of our day of conference together? There is one who has been appointed. Oh yes, God will overturn and overturn and overturn until he come whose right it is to reign, and I will give it unto him. Oh, we are glad tonight that where the lack of men found in earth, and where there's a great need, and men seem to be going everywhere to find somebody suitable just to take control and take the reins, great to know God has said, yet I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. Oh, the heathen may rage, they laugh, they scorn, they may dispute the title of the blessed Lord. Great to know that there, seated upon the throne, he waits in silent dignity. God has said, sit thou on my right hand until I make thy foe thy footstool. This is he of whom the prophets have spoken. Son of God, King of kings, and Lord of lords. Do we give him that place in our lives? Coming in again to our brother's ministry, do we recognize him? Do we give him that place of authority? Is there that which is usurping his place in our life? Israel's woes were always in rejecting the man that God had chosen. They missed the whole point when the blessed Messiah came, and they said, we'll not have this man to reign over us. But God has decreed, I have decreed the decree, I have set my king upon the holy hill of Zion. We are tonight in the consciousness that weakness abounds, frailty exists amongst us as the people of God, but there is one to whom we can turn. There is a shepherd living there, the firstborn from the dead, who tends with sweet, unwearied care the flock for which he bled. Who to know God has said, this is he. Soon he'll come, and the world will give to him his rightful place, and we shall be glad in that day to say that he's a friend of mine. Good to be associated with him in the day of his rejection, just like the men of David, when in the cave of Adullam he lay outcast and unwanted. The day came when upon the throne he sat. He remembered those in their faithfulness who stood by his side, and they were indeed duly rewarded in the day of his glory. Be grand to hear his voice in a coming day, in the measure in which we have heard it here, in the measure in which we have obeyed it here, to hear again that same voice say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And so may the Lord help us in our desire to increase our spiritual maturity and growth, to be exercised, to keep the vision sharp and clear, to keep the ear well cleaned out and tuned and listening for his voice, not only as regards our time here, but waiting for the shout that will be given. May the Lord bless his word to us.